Sports City, another edition, another week, and a whole another week of sports. Very exciting week in sports, especially for my hometown teams. But you know, it's always an exciting week in sports for my hometown teams because there's always something going on, and that's the best thing about sports. There's just always something going on, and there's always things to talk about. So a sports show should be easy, right? Yeah, that's about what I think. I'd say that sports show is pretty easy, just because there's always stuff to talk about. Anyways, that's off topic. A little housekeeping. We have a number that you can call in, and that number is 415-482-3587. Again, 415-482-3587. Calls are welcomed. You can really call about anything at any time. Doesn't really matter what I'm talking about. It'd be nice if kept it on topic, but honestly, sports is sports. I really don't care all that much. Just call about anything. Also, Facebook page, Sports City with Jay Smith. Go like that on Facebook. Let you know when all the shows are, when all the new sports news, all that type of stuff. Plus, it's a pretty cool logo, I think. You know, you got the Warriors logo, got the cool city logo. Just look at it. It's nice. Anyways, we have, as always, King's Corner after the break and as our first segment. And I have some very interesting news on King's Corner as I went to a Kings game in the past week at a new stadium, not Arco Arena, or as it's now called, Power Balance Pavilion, but really it's Arco Arena. And my first trip outside of Arco Arena for a Kings game was this week. So I will update you on that. It was very interesting. And that is all after the break.
Yeah.
And we're back on Sports City with Jay Smith on radio.dominican.edu. And remember, that's every Tuesday, 5 to 6. You can always podcast it, but to listen live, Tuesday, 5 to 6, don't forget that. It's a good show. On to sports, the reason we're all here. First, we have King's Corner, and it was an interesting week for King's Corner as I went to Oracle Arena, or Oracle Coliseum, Oakland Coliseum, whatever you want to call it, and I saw the Kings play the Warriors in Oakland. First time ever seeing a Kings game outside of Sacramento, and I was very excited, you know? Finally get to root for a road team, see what all those dumb Lakers fans in Sacramento are all cheering about. So, go to the game. Number one, it's pouring. Not a good start. Absolutely pouring. And the worst part about it pouring is that with security at Oracle Arena, it's just like an airport security. You have to take your wallet and your phone and all the metal stuff. And you have all these metal detectors. And you have to do all of that. And so there's a huge line, just like an airport. And the line is all outside, which is absolutely ridiculous for the Bay Area, for a stadium in the Bay Area, since, you know, it rains and it's cold in the Bay Area a lot and it's windy. And that's exactly what it was on Saturday when they played. So I had to wait in the rain for about 15 minutes. And unfortunately, I didn't have a rain jacket. That was miserable thing number one. The next part, actually, you know what? I'm going to get the good things out of the way of this game. Because there were a couple good things that happened. Number one, a guy, there were four people to contest for, they did a free throw, 3-point, and half court. Actually, we have a call on Sports City. Sports City with Jay Smith. Who do we have here? Unfortunately, must have lost the call. If you're calling, try again. You can go ahead and try again. I don't know why it wouldn't work, but yeah, go ahead and try again. But the good things. This guy made a half-court shot to win $10,000 at the game. Sports City with Jay Smith.
Jordan. You can't hear me.
Who do we have here?
Jordan, this is Blake.
Hey, Blake. How you doing?
Good. How are you, man?
I'm pretty good. You're on Sports City Live. What do you have to talk about?
Hey, I'd like to talk about the Kings and how we're beating teams like Memphis and Boston.
Yep.
You know, we had a good little three-game winning streak.
Exactly.
But then we go and lose three games in a row that are very close. I want your take on what you think we need to do to get that extra leverage in these games and win a few.
And you know what? All of those games have been close, except for maybe the Boston game. That wasn't close. That was just a demolishing. But in the games that we've won, we've executed offensively. It's really about executing offensively, I think. And you saw Marcus Thornton in that three-game winning streak just go off, had 90-something points in that three-game winning streak. It seems as though the way Marcus Thornton goes, that's the way that Kings go. And when he's off, then it's just bad news.
Yeah.
I also think that turnovers in the last minute have just plagued the team all year. And it included the Warriors game against a bad team.
Isaiah Thomas
messed up. Terrence Williams messed up with 15 seconds left. It just was sloppy play down the stretch. And Kings fans love to use this excuse, as you know, but, oh, we're young. You know, you hear that all the time, right?
Yeah.
That may be the one time that it is credible, that the young excuse could be credible.
Yeah.
Because,
all right, well, thank you for your opinion, Jordan.
Anytime, Blake, anytime. Remember, you can call me anytime.
I love your show. You're doing great, man.
Thank you. Nice to talk to you, Blake. And, yeah, That's the thing. Continuing on with that, it's the youth, especially our most clutch, our clutchest shooter, however you want to say that, is Marcus Thornton. And he's a legit clutch guy. He has great points per game in clutch situations. He has good field goal percentage in clutch situations. And clutch situations is usually 5-4 minutes to go, and the game is within five. That's a clutch situation. Marcus Thornton is good, but that's it. As I talked about on a previous show, Kobe is supposed to be good in the clutch, but if one person is good, then that's not a good thing. You have teams that are clutch, like any team that Chris Paul is on, or any team that a legit superstar point guard is on. They run an offense, and they have a veteran leading everything so that they can really mesh as a team and run a regular offense in clutch situations. It doesn't matter. They don't try to play hero ball. The Kings, on the other hand, had Isaiah Thomas trying to play hero ball. He tried to dribble and dribble and dribble, and eventually made a dumb mistake and lost his dribble. And it was... he is a rookie, and he has to learn, and these are learning experiences. But as I said with Blake on the phone, Kings fans are... I'm a little tired of learning experiences and all that type of stuff. So, back to Oracle Arena. The half-court shot. Just to bring that up again, that was the coolest thing. That was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. Seeing a half-court shot being made in person, it was one of the loudest times the arena was during the entire game. Even though it was a close game against a division rival, that arena, and including me, not even a Warriors fan, and I just exploded. It was so exciting to see a half-court shot made. And the best part was that this same guy absolutely airballed the free throw and the three-point and had just the ugliest of shots. Just absolutely, it was gross, his shot. Hard to look at. And then he throws up that half-quarter, makes it, and just goes bonkers, hugging everybody on the court, just going nuts. It was very, very cool to see. And they kept showing replays throughout the game, and that was really cool. But that's pretty much it for the positives of the game. Like I said, it was raining, and it was packed to get in. So about 15 minutes outside in the rain. Plus, there was a very specific thing that happened at the game. And this has to do with Warriors fans. And a couple things I observed about Warriors fans in the game that I didn't really like. And especially as a loyal Kings fan, Kings fans are very biased and think that Kings fans are the best in the world, which, you know, I think they are. But Warriors fans in the second level, which is where I was, didn't stand up the entire game. I stood up more than Warriors fans there. It was weird. It was a very weird sight. Even with 2 minutes, 3 minutes to go, nobody was standing up. And then finally, with a minute to go, and it's a one-point game, Warriors fans in the first row sit up or stand up. But then the second row just stays seated. And it wasn't just a few sections of the second row. Not one person that I saw when I looked around in the second level was standing. And I was shocked. I was thinking, man, in Arco, everybody would have been stood up 3 minutes ago. This is ridiculous. Another thing that happened with the fans. I, luckily, got a t-shirt from the t-shirt cannon. Just never happened to me before. It was pretty cool. Unfortunately, it was literally just a blank white t-shirt with a Warriors logo on it. It was like an extra large, too. And so I was like, okay, I mean, this is kind of cool that I got a t-shirt, but whatever. And so this about a 16-year-old girl in front of me with her dad is just smiling at me. And so I'm like, okay, you can have the t-shirt. And she's talking about how she's a Warriors fan, so she should get the t-shirt. And I was like, I was saying to myself, you know, this is okay. Who asked for a t-shirt, though? Especially when you're not a little kid. Nobody asked for a t-shirt. You feel lucky if you're given one. So I still gave her one because she said she was a Warriors fan, and I respected that. You know, what if a non-Kings fan got one in Arco? I would feel threatened. That wouldn't be cool. That just wouldn't be cool. I give it to her. With 2.5 minutes left in the game, her and her dad leave the game. It's a one-point game, and they leave. And I was just looking at her, and just feeling so much remorse. I was, oh, it was not a good feeling at all. Just not the type of fanhood that I like to see. I don't like to see anybody leave early for the game. I have taken pride in that I'd never leave early for the game, but it was bad. I gave you this t-shirt because you're a Warriors fan, and then you leave? I didn't like it at all. I didn't like it at all. And of course, the other thing I didn't like about the game was that the Kings lost by three in a stupid, stupid manner. Terrence, as I said with Blake, Terrence Williams gives up the ball on an easy layup fast break with 15 seconds left. Isaiah Thomas just dribbles the ball straight out of bounds on a crossover with 4 seconds left. And Tyreek can't get the 35-foot heave, the desperate heave. And it was just bad basketball. We had 5 turnovers in the last 2 minutes. It was just bad basketball on both ends. Another rookie gets a career high against us, as what seems to happen during every Kings game. Just a bad, bad game. And to make it worse, everybody's hero, Jimmer Fredette, didn't play a minute. Not 1 minute. We never got to see Jimmer throw up his 30-footers. Never got to see what he could do next. You look at Jimmer and you see the excitement level. You think, you know what? He's going to do something. He's one of those players that can do something special. He has good balance. He can make those tough shots. He can make the 30-footers and the 28-footers that are so exciting and get the whole team riled up. Keith Smart didn't play him at all. Keith Smart's strength as a coach is bringing up troubled players. You saw the difference between Cousins now and Cousins during Westfall. Just a world of difference. You see that Tyreek is willing to come off the bench for the team, and that would never happen with Westfall. And you see these players, these supposedly troubled players, acting more and more like a team, especially during that 3-game winning streak. His substitutions, however, I think are just straight up bad. Straight up bad. He doesn't play Jimmer. He kept Terrence Williams in for too long during that Warriors game. During the Rockets game yesterday, Williams played well, and he gave him his due minutes. But Williams was playing okay. He was kind of being a ball hog during the Warriors game, and his substitutions are very subpar. And that is such a huge part of head coaching. As an assistant coach, you know, you'd go through the X's and O's, but the head coach fires the trigger on substitutions, and I just don't think Keith Smart is up to that task as a head coach. And it, you know, maybe as an assistant, he can keep control of the attitude players, which is his specialty. Just like Terrence Williams, we see Terrence Williams playing well. Another attitude problem that Smart is figuring out, but his substitutions are just not up to what they should be at an NBA level. And I'm kind of disappointed, and I'm very disappointed that we signed him for an extension for next year. Well, now, after all that lovely Kings talk, not a lot of good news in Kings Corner today, but still an exciting one. We have March Madness coming up, and as bad as I was doing last week, you know, I'm not doing so bad this week. It's kind of nice not being in the 25th, 24th percentile, but at least I'm not in the 4th percentile. Coming up, we have March Madness, all kinds of March Madness talk. It's very exciting. Keep listening to radio.dominican.edu. Great song. Love the Strokes. They're just a good band. Anyways, this show is not about bands. This show is not about music. This show is about sports. And the biggest sports month of the year, basically, March, kind of into April, is upon us. It's just the height of sports season right now. It's just so beautiful. So much news every single day. You got NFL free agency, the draft coming up, March Madness, down the stretch of the NBA, down the stretch of the NHL. MLB is about to start, of course. Oh, it's just a great, great time to be a sports fan. It's all coming together right now. But the most important thing right now is March Madness. That college basketball tournament every single year. It's getting down to the end, and it's kind of weird that it's almost over. I feel like just yesterday when I was sitting in my class watching on my laptop while he thought I was paying attention. And, you know, luckily we weren't doing anything that day, but it was just March Madness. I couldn't help myself. And that's the only time I'll probably ever do that, but ooh, March Madness is just a whole nother story. And it's come down to the Final Four. Kentucky, Ohio State, Kansas, Louisville, playing each other. Very exciting. And the first game I want to talk about is that Ohio State-Kansas game. Now, I was watching that Kansas game on Sunday, I was watching that Kansas game against that powerhouse, North Carolina. Now, North Carolina didn't have their point guard, Kendall Marshall, their star point guard. But Kansas, the way that they took over in that last bout, what was it, 3-4 minutes? They just took over the game, went on a 12-0 run to finish the game, and just demolished UNC. And really put on a clinic. They had fast break points. They had active hands. They were contesting threes. They were getting open threes. They were just playing college basketball the way it was supposed to be played, basically. And that really influenced my feeling on the Ohio State game. But I just couldn't get past Ohio State. Because Ohio State, number one, they have Jared Sellinger, a top 10, top 15 pick in the draft. He was probably going to go top 10, top 5 last year. He is one of those guys, kind of like Kevin Love, except smaller, that can really bang inside, gets double-digit rebounds all the time, and can also shoot the three, and has a very pretty stroke at that. You know, the style points count sometimes. And he's a very, very, very good all-around player. And I think that he will get his threes in. I think that his outside game will definitely be a factor in that Kansas game. But I think Thomas Robinson of Kansas, that big man, got about 20 double-doubles in the season. I think he's going to dominate in that Ohio State game. But he's going to be the only one because Ohio State has such depth. It seems like almost every game that I looked at, Jared Sellinger was not the only player. You had all these players like Aaron Kraft of Ohio State. They were getting double-digit points. They had 4 or 5 double-digit point scores all the time. And it was that kind of depth really takes you far. You saw it last year in the NBA Finals. The depth beat out on the superstars. I think in this case, that depth basically of superstars will beat out anything else that's thrown their way in this round. And the other game is Kentucky and Louisville, one of the biggest rivalries in college basketball, in any basketball, in sports. It really is just a heated, heated rivalry. They really hate each other. Calipari and Patino, there's a history there. You have the proximity to each other. It's just a great, great rivalry. And I think even though Kentucky is one of the most talented teams that anybody has ever seen, I think that with that rivalry, Louisville is going to win this game. And I think that their fire will be so much bigger than Kentucky, especially as I've had an experience with beating a team 3 times. It's a very, very, very hard thing to do. back in my junior year for soccer, our rival team, our heated, hated rival team, beat us twice in the season. But because it's so hard to beat a team three times, we beat them back in the championship, one of the best sports moments of my life. And I think that Louisville is actually about to have that. They have a legit chance to have that against Kentucky in this Final Four. And for the championship, we'll just keep that to next week. I think I'll, once I see the teams in the championship, I think I'll keep that to next week. Now, up next, we have a little bit of Giants news. Always Giants news. And you guys know how much I love the Giants. We're gonna go a little in-depth today on Giants news. So stick around on radio.dominican.edu. You're not going to want to miss that. And hey, if you want to call in, talk Giants a little bit, remember the number is 415-482-3587. That's 415-482-3587. All Giants coming up. Welcome back to Sports City with Jay Smith on radio.dominican.edu. Remember, Tuesday, 5 to 6 on that station. You don't want to miss it. Even if you podcast it, you can podcast it. Go ahead. But if you want to listen to it live, again, Tuesday, 5 to 6 on radio.dominican.edu. And on to the glorious part of the show, and that's the San Francisco Giants. And I say glorious part because it is still spring training, and every team has that hope, just that hope for something of significance to happen during the season, hoping for a miracle, because winning a championship really is a miracle. It's a miracle to sign these players. It's a miracle to get the right side of the trade. It's a miracle to do all that stuff. 2010, basically a huge miracle for the Giants. Maybe 2012 can be the same way. And I think it will be the same way. And, okay, let me rephrase that. I don't think that the 2010 magic will be in 2012. That will never be recreated. However, there's a guy from that 2011 team, and a couple of years before that too, in Sergio Romo, that is one of my favorite baseball players in the league. He throws two pitches. He's a relief pitcher. Only throws about 70, 60, 50 innings in the entire season. But he is basically, in my opinion, if we take closers as just their numbers and not with the closer mentality and all that stuff, he's the best reliever in the league. Sergio Romo is the best reliever in the entire league. Last year, he had these sort of numbers. A strikeout-to-walk ratio of 14. When Cliff Lee made news, and Cliff Lee is a starter, give him that, but when Cliff Lee was making big news about a 7-to-1 strikeout-walk ratio, that was huge. Everybody was flipping out. Sergio Romo says, nah, I'll double that. 14 strikeouts for every one walk. And then he goes on, and it's not as if he's just not walking anybody and then striking out some people. He strikes out 13 people for every 9 innings that he pitches. So about 1.5 strikeouts every inning. That's absolutely unbelievable. And as Moneyball taught us, not all outs are created created equally. Strikeouts are technically better than a sacrifice fly or something like that, or a sacrifice bunt. Strikeouts are important, and Sergio Romo is basically, according to these stats, and in today's baseball, stats are what matters, basically the best reliever in the game. Also of note, last year, he got 27 straight outs. He got 27 straight outs last year, and he's the first pitcher first reliever to do that in 70 years. It just doesn't happen. And Sergio Romo said, nah, it's going to happen with me. And against right-handed batters, which is where he pitches most, he pitches about two-thirds, three-quarters of the time to right-handed batters because Bruce Bochy, as he should, puts him in mostly against righties. I think he should put him in against lefties more, but that's just my opinion. Against right-handed batters, and remember, Sergio Romo is a righty, he has an OPS plus against of 16. Now, an OPS plus is kind of the all-encompassing stat, and 100 is the average. 16 would be the worst. If you had a 16 OPS plus, that would be the worst average. That would be the worst in the game. By a long shot, too. It is just awful. And Sergio Romo is doing that against right-handed batters. It's just a little ridiculous what he can do against right-handed batters, and really against left-handed batters, too. I will always praise Bruce Bochy for the way he handled the bullpen in 2010. But last year, a little worse. Sports City with Jay Smith. Who do we have here?
Jay Smith. Antonio from Sacktown.
What's up, Tony? How you doing?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. Love your show.
Thank you. Here to talk Giants?
What was that?
Here to talk Giants?
Yes, I am, of course.
Excellent.
Always. I just have a couple concerns about the Giants this year.
All right, shoot it my way.
First concern, my biggest concern, and it's kind of extreme, but the Dodgers have a huge payroll this year and next year. I feel like if the Giants don't pick up Kane, the Dodgers are going to shoot a huge number at Kane, and then they're going to shoot a huge number at Lincecum. Just wanted to get your take on that. And I feel like not everyone on the team is just taking it easy, you know?
I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
Like, I don't feel a fire this year.
I definitely know what you mean. It's kind of a a lot of people are just acting nonchalant, you know? These injuries are taking a little longer than expected to heal.
Exactly.
Everybody's just kind of, gracing in to really hitting their stride, which they need to hit their stride at opening day. That's when it needs
exactly.
to happen. And it's just kind of taking a long time. I know what you mean. On the Matt Cain situation, awful. Just an awful, awful situation. I know exactly what you mean. He will be a free agent next year if we don't sign him to an extension of any sort.
And it just makes you sick. It just makes you sick thinking about him going into free agency because the Yankees, Dodgers, Boston, who else is going to throw out huge numbers that the Giants can't match?
Exactly. I've actually seen photoshopped pictures of Matt Cain in a Yankees uniform, in a Red Sox uniform, and it's just disgusting. Matt Cain is Matt Cain. Matt Cain is a Giant. He is, for huge Giants fans, he is the face of the Giants. You know, he's been around since the bad times, since 06, 07.
Exactly.
He's our longest tenured Giant.
For real Giants fans, I feel everybody loves him, but not everybody. I mean, everybody likes him, but only real Giants fans really love him and really know how valuable he is to this team.
Exactly. And never been injured. Basically, I feel like only last year during spring training was the first injury scare Matt Cain had ever had, and
mm-hmm.
that ended up not even being anything. He's never been injured. He goes out and has an ERA of 3.1, throws 215 innings every single year. That's a huge value to a team, especially a team built on pitching. And in my opinion, the worst part of this whole situation in that Brian Sabian hasn't gotten a contract is because Sabian and the whole front office of the Giants said that, no, we can't spend money on Beltran. We can't spend money on Jose Reyes or Jimmy Rollins because we have to save all of our money for our pitching and to re-sign our pitching. Why haven't we re-signed our pitching yet then? It doesn't make sense. If you're saying all of this, then you need to sign Matt Cain to whatever it takes to sign Matt Cain. Tim Lincecum is going to be a free agent in a year and a half. You need to sign Tim Lincecum to whatever it takes to sign Tim Lincecum.
We got to lock them down before they get on free agency because that's after that, you never know what's going to happen.
Exactly. A team built solely on pitching and hoping for league average hitting needs to keep that top pitching in line because that's the only way that we're going to have a chance to win.
Yep. Pitching and base running is going to be the keys for our season
exactly,
this year.
Exactly, exactly.
But, all right. Thanks for your time, and I love your show, and I'll continue listening.
Awesome. Thanks for calling
in,
Tony.
Man.
Always a pleasure to hear from some buddies from back home, and they do know what they're talking about. And that Matt Cain situation is really just awful. And and another bad part about it, last I read about a week ago, was that Sabian and that whole negotiating team of the Giants, and then Matt Cain's corner, Matt Cain, his agent, everyone in Matt Cain's corner, it turns out are 2 to 3 years apart and millions, not just a couple million, but millions of dollars apart from where they want to be in negotiations. And like I said to Tony, Sabian didn't spend any money on batting and getting that big bat this year because he wanted to spend all the money on pitching. We've seen Affelt and Lopez get paid. Two lefty relievers, two of the same exact player. So that's $9 million right there. But where is the $100 million that you could have given to Beltran and you're supposed to give to Kane. That just hasn't been doled out yet. And it's threatening. Like Tony said, he started out with the Dodgers, possibly getting Matt Cain or Tim Lincecum. I have trouble talking about it. I'm shaking talking about it. That's one of the worst things I could ever picture in my entire mind. Matt Cain in a Dodgers uniform is, that's just awful. It's just awful. That's the only word for it. Awfulness. And on to other semi-disappointing stuff about the Giants, you know? You always hope and hope and hope, but you get down to this team, and there's a lot of flaws to this team. One of them is Freddy Sanchez. Now, Freddy Sanchez, last year, mid-June, early June, had a dislocated shoulder, and it was just supposed to be a dislocated shoulder. I remember reports are coming out, oh, you know, he might be back by September. He might be back for the stretch run, and everybody in the Giants is thinking, and everybody that roots for the Giants is thinking, great, we're going to need him. He never came back. We realized, okay, he'll definitely be ready for opening day, right? During offseason, there were reports, you know, Freddie is taking a little longer than expected. He might not be ready, in fact, for opening day. By now, the reports from Andrew Baggerly, whatever it is, he is in with the Giants. And this is a reliable source. He is with the Giants every day. He's a beat writer. He knows what he's talking about. He is saying that Freddy Sanchez's career might be over. Now, that's a serious, serious thing for the Giants because they have absolutely zero middle infield depth. They have Mike Fontenot, Ryan Theriault, and Manny Burris. Fontenot is average on a good day. Theriault is one of the worst fielders I've ever seen in my entire life. You can go on YouTube, actually. I suggest this video. Go on YouTube, type in Ryan Theriault fielding. You'll probably come up with the video that I saw. It's all him with the Cardinals, and it's all bad. Bobbling balls, dropping fly balls, messing up double plays. Just not good. He ends up kicking a ball at one point, I think. Very, very ugly fielding. And you'd think, oh, but, you know, right next to him, we have Brandon Crawford. And Brandon Crawford can do anything on the field. And really, he can. The dude is one of the best shortstops in the entire league for on a fielding basis. But then you see Brandon Crawford's batting line, and it's somewhere around 210, 215, on-base percentage of, like, 310, and a slugging percentage of something in the 300s. And that's just straight ugly. It's bad. Even though shortstop is not the most hitting position on the field, we have guys in our own division like Troy Tulowitzki, who is one of the best hitters in the entire league. And he plays shortstop, and he plays shortstop well, too, on the defensive and offensive side. Brandon Crawford, while he may be young, is just not the hitter that a hitting-deprived team needs. And we're supposed to build this team on defense, but then you look at the second baseman and you see Theriault and Fontenot, again, an average fielder. He's pretty average at everything, except for height. Very below average on height. And then you have Manny Burris. Manny Burris is supposed to be fast. He's supposed to be quick, agile. He was a first-round pick, even. And he was supposed to be just this athletic middle infielder that could just jump all over the field. He doesn't seem to have the best baseball IQ. I saw him make a nice line drive catch during a spring training game that luckily was on ESPN too. It's always nice when Giants spring training games are on TV. But Burris just does not have the same baseball IQ that you would expect from someone like Freddy Sanchez. Every Giants fan remembers Game 4 of the World Series when Freddy Sanchez was just playing out of his mind. Just absolutely out of his mind. He turned a great double play. He got a deflection, turned his entire body, and tagged the runner out, which was one of the most athletic plays I've ever seen a second baseman do. He made that snow cone catch at the beginning of the game that robbed a run from the Rangers. these were all huge, huge plays and all those intangibles that everybody loves to talk about, but Freddy Sanchez has them. And Manny Burris, Terrio, Fontenot, they don't. Even our prospects, like Joe Panic, going to be a great hitter someday. That someday is going to be probably 2013, 2014. Charlie Culberson, there's been talk about him. He's, you know, in the top 15, top 20 of Giants prospects. No, he is not, definitely not ready to bat for a contending team at second base. And the depth is something that, again, just did not happen over the offseason. Another thing that we saw needed depth. We saw Freddy Sanchez is injured. We're just going to hope that he comes back by opening day and plays 140 games, even though the last time he played that many games was 2008. And we're just going to hope that our season goes to plan. Hoping. It's not good baseball, and it's not good offseason work to just hope. And one more thing that people are hoping for is Buster Posey playing 120, 130 games at catcher. That is probably, unfortunately for all Giants fans out there, that is probably just not going to happen. Coming back from a devastating injury like that, it takes time to heal. Today was the first day he played back-to-back games at catcher, a huge step. But considering that playing back-to-back games as a catcher is a huge step, is bad news in itself. Which means Chris Stewart, Eli Whiteside, and Hector Sanchez are going to get some playing time. Now, what I want is Hector Sanchez actually to start in Fresno as AAA. I don't want him to be rushed up to the big leagues. We saw what happened with Brandon Bell when he got rushed up. We see what happens with Brandon Crawford when he got rushed up. Some people like Buster Posey can handle it, but not all people are Buster Posey. Hector Sanchez is certainly not Buster Posey. So in fact, I want Chris Stewart, because Chris Stewart throws out something like 40, 50% of base runners and blocks the plate really well. Then obviously knows how to catch a game, because Tim Lincecum specifically asked for him to pitch last year instead of Whiteside. What's actually going to happen is Eli Whiteside, the good old tackler himself, the Polanco tackler himself, will be our backup catcher. Whiteside's about a 220 hitter. Stewart's about a 210, 200 hitter. I would take that great defense and great gamesmanship from a catcher any day of the week over that extra 20 points of batting average and an extra 30 points of on-base percentage. Chris Stewart should be in the game because of his defense. You saw, he did hit a couple home runs last year, so maybe the power is there, but I think he needs to be in there because Buster Posey is not going to play that much, or at least as much as we expect, and our backup catcher situation is dire. Last year, the catchers and shortstops were just absolutely awful. Just awful last year. And we did nothing to improve it. And that goes back to Brian Sabian. Even though he's the longest tenured general manager in the game, things are starting to look worse and worse for him as general manager. And it's just not looking good for his past couple off seasons, especially with Huff's contract and Tejada's contract last year. Just not good decisions by the front office. Up next, we have a little bit of NBA talk, switching over from the Giants to NBA. Big news, and actually big games from the NBA were happening this past week. So, very exciting stuff, actually. You're not going to want to miss this on radio.dominican.edu.
Hello, I've waited here for you. tonight. I throw myself into who? And out of the red, out of her head, she sang. Come down and waste away with me. Down with me. Slow how you wanted it to be. I'm over my head, out of her head, she sang. And I wonder, when I sing along with you, everything could ever feel this real forever. If anything could ever be this good again. The only thing I'll ever ask of you, you gotta promise not to stop when I say when. She sang. Feel this real forever. If anything could ever be this good again. The only thing I'll ever ask of you, you gotta promise not to stop when I say when.
And we're back on Sports City with Jay Smith here on radio.dominican.edu. Now, for my favorite sport, time for my favorite sport, and that's the NBA. That's professional basketball. Big game happened a couple days ago in professional basketball, and that was essentially what a lot of people think are the two best teams in the league, and that was the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Miami Heat. Miami Heat, obviously, with their big three, Thunder with their big three, plus their supporting cast, and I think from seeing the game that the Thunder have made the leap. And not just from that game. You can see it in all the other games. But the Thunder have made that leap from the 4-seed that they were a couple years ago, just that young up-and-comer that could challenge anyone, to the Western Conference finalists that they were last year, to NBA finalists and probably NBA championship winners. They've just made that exact progression that Sam Presti, their general manager, was going for. He got it right in the drafts. He got it right in the trades. He got it right in free agency. Picking up Perkins last year was huge. They now have unbelievable front court depth. And that's actually a huge X factor that I see with the Oklahoma City Thunder, is that with the Heat, you see that they have Bosch and they have everyone else, but they don't have the depth that Nick Collison, that Kendrick Perkins, that Serge Ibaka bring. Those are three big men that try hard on every game and that have very specific role-playing skills that have in the past worked. You see Nick Collison has one of the best plus-minuses in the game. It's unbelievable. For a guy that plays 20 minutes a game, he has like a top 15 plus-minus. He really makes a difference with all the little things that he does on the court. Serge Ibaka, obviously leading the league in blocks. Huge provider. Kendrick Perkins, everybody saw what he could do with the Celtics championship team and with those Celtics contenders, and that was huge. And I think that in that past game, while LeBron may be the best regular season player ever, the team defense of the Thunder made a difference. You saw even their offensive players like Durant, Westbrook, Harden, players that are mostly offense, you saw them play hard team defense. The Heat only scored 87 points on a Thunder team most known for its high-flying offense with Durant and Westbrook. And it just, I don't know. I saw the Thunder make that leap into elite status. Everybody in sports like to talk about, did they make it to the elite? Are they elite now? Not to use a cliche, but the Thunder are very elite. And I called the Heat winning the championship preseason. I said that they will win it. Even though it was a favorite pick, I saw no way that the Heat could lose the championship, especially with the addition of Shane Battier. I'm a huge Shane Battier fan. And I thought that, you know what, with them not using Bibby anymore, as much as I love Bibby, he was basically the worst player in the NBA last year. They will win. I don't see anybody stopping them. Thunder just stopped him, and they just stopped him good. And that threw a whole lot of negativity on the Heat's championship run. Unfortunately, that's the end of the show. It is 6:01 already. Time just flies when you're having fun. And so I'd like to thank my callers, actually, for calling in today. Always nice to hear from buddies back home. And you have been listening to Sports City with Jay Smith every Tuesday, 5 to 6, on radio.dominican.edu.